Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. The best NHL analysis and insight. It's what's on the lunch menu. Eat up. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome once again to the program, Hockey Central at noon. So now, finally, gentlemen, the first round is done alongside Todd Hulishko and Doug McClain. First round done. Second round has already begun. The Islanders, they draw first blood against the Tampa Bay Lightning. 5-3 is the final. But let's begin the broadcast, A, by saying good afternoon, and B, talking about the Nashville Predators, who have once again eliminated the Anaheim Ducks. Anaheim once again eliminated in a Game 7. That is not one, not two, not three, but four times that fate has befallen the Ducks. To which Todd Hulishko and Doug McClain say what? Todd, we'll start with you.
Well, I know on when we were on the show on, what was it, Tuesday, when I was on, we talked about the one guy that could make the biggest difference in the game, and that was Pekka Rinne, and he did. I mean, the game was all about him. And the fact that Anaheim couldn't find the back of the net. Corey Perry, again, goes the entire series without scoring one goal. That's tough when one of your top guys isn't going to score goals. But to me, Pekka Rinne is the reason why they won that game in Game 7.
Doug?
Obviously he was the star. There's no denying that. I shake my head at the whole Getzlaf-Perry thing. They played together for 10 years, and now they only get together on the power play.
You made this point countless times about 88-19 on Chicago.
Well, I don't get this. I mean, we're going into tonight, we've got Malkin and Crosby. You got Getzlaf-Perry, you got Malkin Crosby, you got Taves Kane, you got numerous guys that are. I don't care that you play them together all the time. I say throw them out there to rattle the matchups, to change the matchups, to challenge the matchups, to try and get in a desperation game, mix it up, match it up, see what you can come up with. Mm-hmm. They use them on the power play. Wasn't great. The power play really let them down in this series. It was one of the best power plays in the NHL, if not the best, and it let them down big time.
Oh, they're special teams, regular season.
Right. Fantastic. So it really let them down. I feel for Bruce, but, this cloud hanging over a good coach's head is frustrating because he's a good coach. And,
Let's get on the Bruce. You brought it up, so let's get to it right away. It's the elephant in the room. There was some speculation beginning of the season that Bruce Boudreau may not survive until Christmas. This is when the team was in a swoon. We saw them last year take away Brad Lauer, his assistant, Trent Yanni on the bench, Paul McClain. Doug, you've made this point countless times. The first move is always remove the assistants, and that's the sort of beginning of the end. Does this spell, just to be blunt, does this spell the end of Bruce Boudreau in Anaheim? Harsh conversation, but it's the reality of the NHL.
Yeah, I think it probably does. And, I think whether it doesn't matter if he's a good coach or not, it's 4 years, good runs. I mean, I loved their run last year. I mean, you lose to a Chicago Blackhawk team in the conference final in 7 games. I mean, there's no denying that that's not a great season. Frustrating at the end, but not a great season. So I don't like to see it. I happen to like Bruce a lot. I think he's a good, solid coach. He's getting a reputation of a great regular season coach and not a playoff coach. But, lots of times there's other elements that go into it more than that.
Sure.
He'll get a job, whether it's in Ottawa or Minnesota.
Within about 5 minutes.
Yeah, and that's fine. So, he might be ready for a change, too, to be quite honest.
And it's the nature of the beast. He's gone 6 straight game 7s. Losing. He's 1-6, I believe. That's his record right now. And it's unfortunate. And I hate it. I'm a player, or I was a player before. And it's tough because it's not always a coach's fault. It really isn't. And, he can't go out there and he can't grab Corey Perry's stick and help him score goals. I mean, at the end of the day, that game last night could have went either way. And I think the reason, we wouldn't be talking about this today, or we'd be talking the same way had Ken Hitchcock lost Game 7 in St. Louis. But now Ken Hitchcock has got renewed life. He's going to get going. And if they go on to win the Stanley Cup, it's a great thing. You wouldn't even think about the fact that they almost lost Game. They could have lost Game 7 in Chicago. Same thing with Boudreau. I think he's a fantastic coach. And like Doug said, he's going to land on his feet very quickly if he does get fired. I hope he doesn't. I hope he stays in Anaheim.
Game 7s are such a strange beast. Go ahead.
Well, you look at and you say, okay, where are the $8 to $10 million guys? You know, where's Kane and Taves when you really, really need them? They've been there. It's hard to ever criticize those two guys, but they've been there so many times.
Yeah.
But Chicago, I mean, I'm looking at Chicago. You go into game five of that series and four of their top six didn't have a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Then you look last night and you say Kessler did his part, four goals in the series, battled, grind it. Perry, that's why you're paid. He's a heck of a player. You love everything he and Getzlaf bring to the table. Again, hard to criticize those guys, but Bruce Boudreau gets fired probably.
Mm-hmm.
And you win with your horses, and he played Getzlaf. What did Getzlaf end with last night? 25 plus
every other shift. He was double shifting.
Yeah, so he did everything he could. Bruce did to win that game.
So
for
let me ask you this then: is this then more of a reflection, because Bruce is going to wear it? Bruce Boudreau is going to wear this loss. Who knows if he ends up walking the plank? Many of us suspect that he will. Is this more of a comment on the high priced help? Or the coach? Game 7 is weird.
It's not a comment of either, because for me, Bob Murray has done one of the better jobs in the NHL from a general manager perspective for me. He's put together a great young puck-moving, mobile blue line with some size and skill. He's added some real good depth as the season goes on. He's a budget team. I think he's done a real solid job as a GM. He hasn't been able to get over the hump. Okay, that's fair. Pekka Rene, to me, was the only difference. I mean, they dominated that game last night. That's not a coaching problem. That's not anything other than a goaltending standing on his head, and it happens in lots of nights.
Yeah.
And I think both Bruce and I think Bob have done good jobs. And, you know, so, and yet, how do you go after Getzlaf and Perry? I mean, they've won a Stanley Cup already in their career. They're heart
Olympians,
soul.
Gold medalists.
Yeah, come on. Like, they're, you don't, for sure. To me, those, it's like Kane and Taves. You don't go after those guys. They're too good.
To me, Doug, I think it was part frustration last night. I mean, Anaheim, you know, I guess I think it was the second power play I was watching that they could not get their zone entry in at all. It was unbelievable. They had maybe 5 to 10 seconds of power play zone or power play time in their zone. They couldn't get in. And it seemed like every shift, frustration was building up every single time, because it was such a suffocating defense on Nashville's part. So, yes, it was Pekka Rene, but Nashville did an unbelievable job of collapsing down below the hash marks and making sure there wasn't any quality scoring chances and absolutely zero secondary scoring chances. So Roman Josi blocks 8 shots yesterday. I mean, Shea Weber, those guys were unbelievable. So I just think that it was a combination of a number of things. I think that Anaheim gave everything they had, but I think just a complete team effort by Nashville. That's what did it to them last night.
And you know, they kept things to the outside. They did all those things. The entries, you know, skill want to make plays on entries, okay? And they love the cross-ice pass. They love to, you know, because they shift the box. They do a real good job. How many times last night did Getzlaf go from dot to the opposite side on a power play with great backhand passes, forehand passes? Sometimes you've got to find another way to get the puck in the zone. I remember the power play Todd was talking about. I mean, it was bizarre how they couldn't. And I give Nashville credit, but come on. It's like the New York Rangers getting 5 shots on goal at home against Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh did such a great job in the neutral zone. Are you kidding me?
And then you know,
get it through the neutral zone.
And that festers too. You know, that gets worse. Like you see the head, the body slouches. Like,
well,
oh
it's
my
your
God,
stars that get frustrated.
And they're sour. They just get me the puck. That's what they want. And they weren't getting it, and they weren't getting the zone. And you could just see them sloping their head. Their body language sucked on the power play. And that was a big, big problem last night.
Okay, so we focus so much on Anaheim losing Game 7. This is, you know, the first Game 7 in Nashville Predators history, and they win it. And Todd, to your point, front and center is the netminder, Pekka Rinne. That defense, as you mentioned, stifling as far as shot suppression goes. They're amongst the top in the NHL going away. What do we make of the Nashville Predators so far in the playoffs? And had they lost last night, what would we be saying about Nashville?
Well, that they can't seem to get it done at playoff time, you know, with 2 or 3 series wins in 18 years.
But it's a one puck game.
Here's the other thing that you know, you've got to comment on is they went in and won 3 games at the Honda Center.
Correct.
Yeah.
The Nashville Predators won 3 games in there in a series. I mean, how does that happen? Mm-hmm. So give them full marks. They've got, as Todd mentioned, they got a great defense. They've got some heart and soul guys with Fisher. And, I mean, Johansson and Neal have been an okay – I mean, should be a real – got them in the playoffs, to be quite honest. They were so good down the stretch. But they had some guys really step up in big plays, and it was Pecorino, and it was the defensive play that did it.
It was, and you know the other thing that I liked about Nashville and Laviolette is that Nashville got completely destroyed when it came to getting out hit last night. The physical element that Anaheim brought on to Nashville last night was crazy. And the thing that I liked about Nashville is they never strayed from their game plan. They got hit and it wasn't kind of getting up and all of a sudden giving a guy a whack in the back of the calves because he got hit. They just went and they kept playing the game. And they knew that if they kept doing that, didn't retaliate, there was going to be an element of frustration on Anaheim. And that's what kept on happening. And not until, you know, the power play in the third period did they get the goal. There was a little bit of a glimmer of hope, but they just stayed the plan, the course the whole time. Mm-hmm. And that course was solid defense in their own zone and limiting the quality chances.
Sometimes I look at skill teams and playoff time, they want to crunch and take the body nonstop. Like I'm watching the Caps last week against
game
Philly.
Five against Philly, they went and hit everything.
Well, yes. you got Ovechkin with 100 hits crushing and two shots. I mean, you know, sometimes it's time to say, okay, yeah, let's take the body, let's take the, you know, separate the puck from body.
Pause on that for 1 second. Isn't that strange the way, because for game five, Washington, that was at home. I know exactly what you're talking about. And last night, that was Anaheim at home too.
Right.
So is that just that an at-home phenomenon during the playoffs, Doug? You were there.
It's you. Certain teams have to play that way. I'm 100% with that. Sometimes you have to play that way. But there's some teams and some parts of your team that have got to get away from that a little bit. Some guys on your team have got to just step back and say, I need Corey Perry focusing on scoring goals and getting to the paint and getting to the slot area. I don't need Corey Perry running over people. I don't need Getzlaf running over people. I need them making plays in critical areas. And I think sometimes, you know what it's like, Todd, you get into the emotion of a home game, you get the crowd, you got everybody going, and it's ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
But that's the thing, too. You hit when you don't have the puck. I understand we're all in love with hit stats and all that, but...
Yeah.
That's the frustration
in some ways, I mean, that's a really underwhelming number because, okay, so, wow, your hit stats are great, but that just means you don't have possession of the puck.
And that means that you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. That's a big...
You're
chasing, and it's things aren't happening for you, so what do? Let me get back to the basics and let me try to be physical and try to change it to... But to Doug's point, you don't want your superstars doing that. You can't do that. And I think that, you know, and we'll talk about leading up to the Washington-Pittsburgh series. I think that you're going to see Ovechkin maybe tail that back. I think that Barry Trotz is going to say, hey, take that back. We don't need you doing that. So I think that's what happened. But again, you've got to give Nashville credit. They frustrated this team and they caused Getzlaf and Perry to engage in that type of game. I know they're both physical guys, but maybe a little bit over the edge in this series.
And, you know, David Poile and Laviolette, you know, some big moves the last couple of years to try to get here. They have to do it while Weber and these guys are there. I mean, you see the emergence of the young blue line with Ellis and Lindbaum.
What's that?
The emergence of the young blue line with Ellis. And I mean, everybody talks Josi Weber. I mean, we didn't know who Josi was 2 years ago, and all of a sudden now
Norris candidate. Matthias Ekholm is fantastic.
And Ekholm has become a star. And Ellis has become a star.
And a veteran like Jackman, too. Throw that in there, and he helps it out, right?
And a big move when you move Seth Jones to bring in the big horse down the middle. Now, has Johansson been the big horse down the middle? I don't know, but I sure like the look of their team with him there. I know that.
There's a reason why Minnesota was after him hard when he was out there.
What about a guy, I'm going to jump up, but a guy like Colin Wilson last night stepping up huge. I mean, a big body, goes and has a terrible season like he had 8 goals, he had 20 the previous season. Yeah. This guy goes up and just scores the biggest goal of his career last night.
Interestingly enough, too, it's widely believed that you mentioned the Seth Jones, Ryan Johansson trade. Interestingly enough, that was believed to be a 4-player deal, and Colin Wilson and Scott Hartnell would be the other two that were switching that ended up being a 1-for-1.
Sometimes those trades you don't make are the best ones. David Poile on his flight to San Jose last night was saying, I'm glad we kept... I'm glad they
just
didn't.
Just a 1-for-1.
No, it's not. I'm glad we didn't move Colin. I'm glad they didn't want him.
Okay, so you mentioned on the way to San Jose, and you know that was, you know, there was a sign on the Nashville Predators door: flight leaves at wherever to Anaheim. Pack for 6 days, and so now they'll face off against the San Jose Sharks, and another test. And hands up around the table, who had the West looking like St. Louis, Dallas, Nashville, and San Jose, but there we are. How do the Preds stack up against the Sharks? What are we looking at here? We'll get on the Islanders Tampa page in a sec.
I went 500 in the first round on my on my picks.
I wasn't good either.
Don't tell Kayla Metz downstairs. She'll be livid.
Okay, well, see, Kayla blew it because she she bailed on me in a couple of picks, and she ended up maybe going two.
Kayla Metz works with us at SportsCenter. So I came to the office today, and Metz said, that's right, I am pissed off about Doug McClain.
Yeah, but I went 4-8. She went 2-8, so obviously she didn't go with all my picks. But anyway, that's fine. I wasn't very good in the West.
Okay.
Neither was I.
Dallas was my only win in the West, which is kind of frustrating, you know. But in the East, I was fine.
Okay.
But you got to think, for San Jose, how good is this for these guys right now? For all the hard luck they've had in all the years, they get past, finally get past LA, and now Chicago's gone, Anaheim's gone. I mean, it's not going to be an easy road, but it looks a lot more clear.
You got a couple of blocks. Field's open. You got a couple of blocks, and the finish line's looking closer.
And now it's even more devastating if you don't get to where you want to go.
That's it.
Because San Jose, the thrill, as we said yesterday to Spalling, Nick, but if you lose the next round, you're still going to be devastated. So now it's like St. Louis are thinking the same thing. Dallas are thinking the same thing. And San Jose are saying, hey, I and Nashville, I like our chances here all of a sudden. Mm-hmm.
That's an
three of those four are going to be pretty upset.
Let's hit pause on that one because that's an interesting point. Who here at this point is playing with house money in the West? Not St. Louis, not Nashville.
You don't think so?
No, I think there's an expectation for Nashville, considering how many times they've had a kick at the can here.
Dallas.
But Dallas is playing with house money, aren't they?
They are for me, without Sagan. He will not start the series and see where he is. Yeah. As this, I mean, for me.
Did Lindy say first two games minimum?
Yeah.
He's not playing?
Yeah. For me, they've got to have him back to have a chance in this series.
Don't disagree.
Yeah.
Don't disagree at all. But
that's
the question
is. That's a profound statement.
That's okay. Let the gravity of that sink in. Pause for a second. Reflect on what Doug has just said.
Yeah.
Is it house money for San Jose, considering everybody has written these guys off? Don't make the playoffs.
No, they've gone to a conference final. And, you know, now they're raving about the job Doug Wilson's done. I mean, they couldn't wait to crucify him at Christmas. Today, it's just a marvelous GM job he's done there. So, you know, they changed the look. The coaching staff appears to be a pretty interesting group. Are they a technical group? Well, Bobby Bugner and Steve Spott are sort of technical guys, I guess. I know Peter DeBoer sure as hell isn't, but he's a really solid guy, and he manages the group really effectively. So I like the mix on that coaching staff with Bugner, Spott, and Peter. They're solid hockey guys that have been around, and looks good on them.
If you ask Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau if they're playing with house money, they'd say no. This is a situation for these guys right now that they want to get it done. They've been told so many years, look, you guys are a leadership group that just can't get it done. Those guys, and I get Jumbo Joe, I'll tell you what, look out for him for the rest of the playoffs. This guy wants to get it done, as does Marleau, and as do the rest of the guys that have been there with failed years of not making it past the first round.
Best we've seen of Joe Pavelski.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
And this is vintage Joe Thornton that we're seeing. I mean, this is like peak Joe Thornton. I mean,
Brett Burns in there.
Edward Vlasic, Justin Braun's one of the more underrated defensemen, and they're getting a save with Martin Jones. And San Jose, interestingly enough, San Jose plays a style of game that's similar to Anaheim in that, I mean, as we saw, you know, the skill players want to make the plays at the blue line, but San Jose makes no bones about playing the retrieval game. Yeah. They're fine to throw dump and chase. Dump it in, retrieve the
puck. Used to be called dump and chase. Now it's called the retrieval.
Trying to hip it up, maybe.
Oh, my God. I can't keep up with this terminology.
I'm surprised.
I got to get with the terminology.
I'm actually, to be honest, guys, I'm surprised that Doug let me say shot suppression without saying, whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean? But the San Jose Sharks are a fascinating squad. And as much as it is still Marleau and Joe Thornton, and boy, aren't we. I mean, we've all forgotten about that Patrick Marleau trade request at the beginning of the year. Remember, that was all the rage for about 2 weeks. And now all of a sudden, Patrick Marleau's tucked away and San Jose's become a nice story, but this does seem like a different San Jose Sharks team. And I say that knowing that I've said that pretty much every season for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
All right then.
Well, no.
You know what shocks me about, and you talk about the value of pro scouting. Okay. And you say, okay, let's look at the moves they made, you know, to change this group. And it starts with the number one thing is Martin Jones. And Martin Jones comes in and listen to the players. They say they're not even anywhere close to where they are without this kid this year. Reimer comes in as a backup, does a real nice job. Joel Ward comes in. And a great free agent pickup.
Great pickup.
What's he got? What'd he end up with? Close to 20 goals, and he's one of those heart and soul two-way guys. You know, there was some real solid, astute moves, not to mention Brett Burns becoming, I'm going to probably say it right now,
a trophy candidate.
A superstar in the league.
He's been all world in this series.
Yeah. I had him on the team Canada on my first list.
For World Cup.
And people thought, and I'm thinking, maybe he's going to be top seven or eight.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I mean, he's moved to the top. I mean, who are you putting on that team right now, he or PK Subban?
I'd have both personally. But
I would too.
But if you had to take one right now,
you're taking Burns.
Brett Burns. Yeah,
I got both of them on the team. I love the look of that team with both those guys on the team. So anyway,
okay, Eastern Conference time. Only a few minutes. Okay, Eastern Conference. How did the Islanders do this? How did they walk into Tampa and chase Ben Bishop after surrendering the first goal? We should point out as well. How did the Islanders do this, guys?
They went into that barn playing the typical road game, not being too flashy, not take what is given to you. I think what they did, what I really like from the Islanders is they had solid puck support below the hash marks all day long. And we talked a little bit off air how teams are collapsing and taking away anything in the goal scoring area. I call it the house. They did a fantastic job of that. And they didn't go after something that wasn't there. They took what was given to them. They got off. I mean, give Tampa Bay Lightning credit. They had a great start to the game. But
Bishop was leaking.
Bishop was a little bit soft. But New York came back, gets that next goal really quick, and they build on it. But for me, it was they were taking what was given to them, and they didn't force the issue with offensive plays, bad pinches, anything like that. I just think that they played a solid road game in the first period, and it turned out with a big lead right off the hop.
Tampa Bay, to me, played the way they played the first half of the season. Soft as baby doo-doo. I mean, come on. It was pathetic the way they played in their own end on a couple of those goals. The coverage was a disgrace for a game one of a playoff series. And
is that too much rest?
I don't know
is
what
that
it
too
was.
Much, is that too much time off?
Don Cherry called it dopiness.
Yeah.
Dopey. They were dopey. Bishop and the rest of them were dopey. Okay. I don't know what they were, whether they were dopey or not, but they were soft. And they're
read
soft
their headlines,
soft
saw
in
team
their coverage.
Beat the Florida Panthers. And
for me, I mean, seriously, three of those goals. Come on.
Well, the Tavares goal is the one that is, and that was the one.
Well, that's the one on Bishop.
Sure.
That's on Bishop.
And that's,
but the other
that
two
is
are
on,
is on coverage.
Yeah.
You know, and then what I liked, so the Islanders did this decent job defensively for me, and yet in the third period, everything, I mean, there was a slot after slot after slot chances, so whatever they were doing disappeared in the third period. But what I liked about it was the way Greiss battled.
He was real good.
And one of the guys I hate in hockey, I hate him. I've never met him, but I hate him, is Yuri Krupp.
Who scored the goal to eliminate the Florida Panthers in 1996.
And
Stanley Cup final.
He said, somebody sent me a note the other day about Yuri Krupp raving about this Greiss kid, how good a player and what a battler he is and what a competitor he is. Well, I'll tell you what, in that last 3 minutes of that game last night, or that last 8 minutes,
10 minutes,
this guy battled his tail off for that team around the paint and grabbed pucks and smothered pucks. And I mean, even the one Phil Pula scored, I mean, it was an amazing battle between goaltender and Phil Pula on that goal. So, you know, and then finally, the best fourth line in hockey came alive last night. They were not very good in the Panthers series.
You want to talk about the Kondra hit?
Well, but I'll tell you what, that set a tone.
That Cizikas hit on Kondra. Yeah. Okay, put yourself in Kondra's position.
I don't want it.
No, I know. You don't want. You didn't want to last night. You don't want to this morning. Yeah. Your grandkids will have migraines.
Oh, my God.
What's the right play if you're Kondra going back to retrieve that puck?
I don't know. It was just a case of Casey Cizikas was coming like a steam truck. I don't know if there was anything he could have done to get out of that. I mean, I guess the one thing he could have picked up the puck and not come back up the weak side, maybe go and hard rim it around the wall the other way. But I'll tell you what, he just didn't see it coming. And everyone talked about it was a clean check, which it was.
It was.
But unfortunately, I don't know if Kondra will be the same again. Not just come back in this series. I'm talking about coming back and playing hockey in general. That was a car wreck. When I watched that, I was like, my God, I hope this kid gets up. And seeing him sit there and just look stone-faced in the air, I was really scared for the kid.
1,000-yard stare.
That was
when they propped Kondra up, he was everywhere except right there at that moment.
It was scary. It was scary. I don't think there's anything he could have done other than a hard around. And this is the thing about NHL safety. Like, how do you avoid that type of hit? You really don't. That's a hockey play.
You just say, well, hockey. Or do you say... Use the boards as a weapon. That's boarding.
The pronunciation expert, John Shannon.
Uwe Krupp?
He said it's not Uri Krupp. It's
Uwe Krupp.
Uwe Krupp.
Yeah. That's okay.
Okay.
It's Macanese. You're speaking. It's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Shanny, relax. Go walk your dog, Shanny. Leave me alone.
Hey, he's tuned in. We appreciate it. We appreciate the support from our man, John Shannon. Tough hit, Doug.
You know what? Yeah, it was.
It changed the whole dimension, the complex of the game, though. Like you said,
I used to always tell guys, and wheel the puck. So anytime you're coming back and you're looking for that, you're never wrong to wheel it. I mean, wheel it meaning carry it or
rim it around.
Either one.
Okay.
But do not when you're because. The best breakout in hockey is when you wheel the puck. In other words, you get it going as quick as you can out of your zone. And sometimes it's gaining the net to do it. And when guys slow down and guys hesitate and there's pressure coming, it's not pretty. And we've seen, guys, how many of these hits have we seen?
Well, here's the interesting thing. When we saw this with Orloff and Belmar, a lot closer to the boards, but players will brace for the hit and look for that bump back hit, right? So they'll start to turn their skates and they'll be the ones that want to initiate contact. But as we saw with Belmar and as we saw last night with Cizikas, these guys have got 5 or 6 steps on you.
Well, and I'll tell you what, I didn't have a lot of highlights during my career, but I did have one hit that was very resemblant of that one. And in 94 in the Olympics, I hit Kenny Johnson with the most devastating hit I've ever given.
Right.
And it was the same situation. He's coming back, his head's looking the other way. And as a forward, you're licking your chops because you're like, I am absolutely going to run right through this guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you're not trying to hit somebody, but you get that, you know, you follow through on your hit very, very hard. And that's what Cizikas did last night. He wasn't letting up and he said, I'm going to finish my check. And it was an unfortunate time for Eric Condra. Just wrong spot, wrong time. Same way as Bruce Bell, how he felt when Wendell Clark hit him behind the net. Wrong place, wrong time. And it sucks to see it. I just hope the kid's better. I hope he's going to be all right.
You know, Don Cherry made the point last night on Coach's Corner. Is it ever cool when you have a fourth line that starts a game and a fourth line that ends a game?
Mm-hmm.
Not many teams have that.
Yeah,
that element.
They bookend the game.
And then you see the play they made on come on, boys. That game was on the line last night when they scored
it's a
one-goal
game.
When Clutterbuck scores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, when that play is made by those guys – after the impact they had in the game, that's pretty cool. Now, what happened to the coach?
Jack Capuano. Yeah. Okay, so that puck didn't catch him clean. That goes off a stick.
But where did
then
he go? Was he laid out on the bench?
No, he stayed there.
No, he cowled up.
Yeah, what happened? The puck came off and it hit Oppozo in the shoulder. So thank God he didn't get it directly. Hit his shoulder, deflected, hit his nose, and he kind of bent over and he took a walk in the back.
Oh, I thought he went down.
No. They held him
flat.
They walked him to the back, and then all of a sudden, I think he was saying that he heard the buzzer go and they scored the next goal. He's like, I got to get my butt
because
back.
Because it looked
there.
Like when he was doing his postgame that it was like a zit popped or something because it was nothing
he'll
on his nose.
He'll have the raccoons today.
Oh,
don't worry, Doug.
They'll be black, yeah.
So it's always bad when coaches. I had a couple of situations. I remember, and I probably told you this story, Dave King just gets hit with the puck on the bench in Columbus and blood everywhere. And I'm up in the press box thinking, get him the hell off the bench. I mean, the blood's coming down the side of his head. He's got the towel up. So I went in after the game, and Dave said, are you okay? And he said, yeah, I'm okay. Did that ever happen to you? I said, no, when I was coaching, I used to watch the game. Poor Dave.
But you know, the weird thing about that is, and this may sound sort of macabre, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often.
I agree.
When they introduced the puck over the glass rule, all I can think of to myself is if I'm a defenseman, if I'm a forward and I'm hemmed into my own zone, and I know I'm sitting a deuce if I throw it over the glass, I sizzle that in the bench so fast. Heads up, boys. Yep. Here it comes, boys.
Oh, I know. It's.
I'm surprised.
I'm waiting for
never
someone to come and
it.
Design something now because
they have
like
the coaches wearing helmets on the ice in practice, so they, maybe
put the visor, the full cages
maybe
behind
put
the bench.
Full visor on them.
But he wishes he
the
had one on last
The players would
night.
Like that, and then they wouldn't hear them as much. The players in St. Louis would love Hitch to have a full visor and helmet.
No, they want the iTech bubble, the whole thing, exactly. The whole goldfish bowl. We'll hit a break. We'll talk a little bit about the Pittsburgh Penguins facing off against the Washington Capitals. Oh, lick your chops for that one. 8 o'clock Eastern on CBC here in Canada. Also, we'll talk about the Vezina Trophy nominees. Two get a free pass. One, we'll just pause and put a question mark beside it. Hockey Central at noon continues. Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network stateside.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrickin for Darren Millard, Todd Holishko, and Doug McLean around the table. Quick little plug for our viewers in Toronto and listeners as well. Marlies Bridport, game three tonight on Rogers TV. Marlies up 2-0. They can sweep this evening. Meanwhile, 8 o'clock Eastern.
3 out of 5 in that?
Yeah, opening round. Opening round. Looking for the sweep.
The owners hate the playoffs in the American League.
Well, because you don't see the gate.
No, you don't see any crowds.
Well, you know why? Because first round, the American Hockey League.
And baseball.
Takes over.
And baseball.
Yeah. And, you know.
It's
tough to do things like group sales and unique ticket initiatives. Yeah.
There was nothing in Bridgeport.
Your season tickets are over, so yeah. they have to buy them now all of a sudden. And I remember the owner when I was coaching in Baltimore. Playoffs. that means we're going to lose money.
That reminds me. That's what I was going to mention on the
program. No, the Marlies don't. They'll draw good crowds.
They always do. Well, with this team. This is Skipjack's lunch.
Yes,
I forgot to mention that. We have two former Baltimore Skipjacks here around the table.
Just after you left, I believe.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So you had Alfie. Did you have Alfie Turcott playing for you back then?
As a matter
this
of fact.
This is very interesting radio, isn't it?
Alfie Turcott.
Doug McLean and Todd Holishko talk about their Skipjack days. Let's just,
great Turcott,
let's just stand back
draft
and listen.
The Montreal Canadiens ended up, he played for me in Baltimore. He's a heck of a player.
He sure was.
Anyway, interesting. My son Clark just talked to Alfie last week in Chicago. Alfie coaches the Chicago Young Americans. And his kid, if he's not the best 0-2 in the country. I think he's an 0-2. 0-2 in the U.S. I don't know who is. I watched him play a couple months ago.
Where does he play? He plays out of?
Chicago.
Mission program?
I think it's the Young Americans he's with. And Alfie's the coach. I didn't envision Alfie as a coach when I coached him. He knew everything. I loved Alfie.
He was great. That's a great line.
He was great.
Okay, tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, this one on CBC. It is the Pittsburgh Penguins. It is the Washington Capitals. We'll party like it's 2009 with these two teams. But as much as it's, and Barry Trotz was saying, hey, it's a disrespect to the other stars of this game, just to position it as Sidney Crosby versus Alexander Ovechkin. That is, I suppose, the headline for this series, 87-8, one more time. But at very different positions of their career, right? Crosby's got the Stanley Cup in his hip pocket. Ovechkin's going down as one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. They're not in their early 20s. They're in their late 20s. How do you guys see this series? Todd, you go first.
Well, I think that, number one, everyone's saying that it's not the Crosby-Ovechkin. It's all about the depth series, which I agree. Both teams have unbelievable depth this time going around. But the bottom line is, I think it's all going to revert back to the Crosby-Ovechkin series as the series moves on. I mean, these are two teams that are highly offensive. They've got a lot of support this year. But I do believe that, and I said this previously, that Alexander Ovechkin is going to take this series personal because he does not have the cups. He does not have the pedigree of winning that Sidney Crosby does. He's got the goal-scoring records. He scored a ton. But he wants the big one, and that's a Stanley Cup. And he's going to be remembered as the guy that couldn't get it done if he can't get past these Pittsburgh Penguins and go win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it'll revert to that real fast. Who's the best of the best in the last decade? And, you know, argue either way, they've both been unbelievable. Sure. Unbelievable.
But those are two that'll always be merry.
Right. And then you look at Crosby, you know, who all of a sudden eventually you say, I don't care about the Hart, I don't care about the Art Ross, I don't care about the I want the Cup. So it'll be interesting where that goes. Sid's at that stage in his career now, and he's desperate for another chance at the Cup. The question for me is Matt Murray versus Holtby in the series. And you got Matt Murray, who's 3-0, was real good. He's had great run support. 4.67 goals a game they have scored for Matt Murray. 2.5 or so for Holtby. So the run support's been half. Goals support, run support's been half for Holtby as it's been for Murray. Power plays, the special teams are in the top three in the league, both teams. This is the makings of being an amazing series for me. And then I was looking this morning doing my analytics review, which I do. And
Doug figuring out war on ice.
And if I'm not mistaken, Kuznetsov's had 19 scoring chances in the last series. Leading 19 scoring chances. And has he got a goal? So now, you know, he's a kid. He's had a marvelous season. He's a great playmaker, but he's had a ton of scoring chances. He's got to find a way. He's got one goal. So he's got to find a way to put up some numbers, hopefully, because the matchup down the middle with Crosby, Bonino, Malkin is going to be real interesting to watch. And they need – the strength of the Caps has been Backstrom, Kuznetsov, 1-2 punch, something they've never had there. That's going to be a real interesting matchup for me.
And their power play, as you mentioned. Now,
both of them are just unbelievable power plays.
Well, then here's what I'm thinking, though. So put on your coach's hat here, Doug. If you are Mike Sullivan or you're Barry Trotz, are you not saying to yourselves, guys, let's just play 50-50 hockey, 5-on-5, and dine out on the power play here?
Or let's not take any penalties. Because both of them are power plays that, for me, they're unbelievably challenging to defend. You look at that with the way they have both setups, you cannot shut those power plays down. Yeah. I mean, you've got so many options on both those power plays that it's impossible. I mean, the old days, you could cheat on Ovechkin. Now you can't cheat on Ovechkin with Oshie and Williams in the slot and with Backstrom where he is and with Carlson emerging where he is. You can't cheat anymore.
Yep.
So I think you've got to do everything. You've got to be physical, as we talked about, but you got to stay out of the box.
I think that the Washington Capitals be successful in this playoff series really have to have the forwards got to be tracking the Pittsburgh defensemen. I think they're going to be active the whole time. I think that this is a team that's north-south. Pittsburgh is so fast. They have so much speed right now. They're going to have secondary waves coming at Washington the whole time. And I think that this is going to be a situation where Washington hasn't seen a team with the offensive depth that Pittsburgh has, and they are really going to rely on Braden Holtby to shut the door for these guys. I think it is, like Doug said, it's going to come down to probably goaltending. You know, I talked to Mike Sullivan on a number of occasions. Matt Murray is the real deal. Like, he doesn't have a huge sample size of what he's done, but he's a real deal, and he's going to be – he's no Braden Holtby, but that's definitely not going to be a weakness for Pittsburgh when it comes to the goaltender in the net.
Interesting, the first 35 games of the season, we said, oh, my God, how can Pittsburgh win a game with this woeful blue line? Letang was playing with Ian Cole. It was a disastrous combination. And all of a sudden, you move Cole down to the 5-6 spot. Dumoulin picks up his game. Daly comes in. Mott is healthy.
Daly's the big one.
He's been a big one. But it's also Daly and who he's playing with, too. Daly was no good, and it was awful in Chicago. Didn't get the ice time. Wasn't a good fit. You liked him in Dallas most of the time. You didn't like him in Chicago. Now you love him. And it's been a great pickup.
A little bit easier to be a defenseman in the Eastern Conference, though. When you look at the West, I mean, that's a big, strong, heavy, quick forecheck. You get to the Eastern Conference, and all of a sudden you have that extra little time to make a play,
It also is, to me, not so much the Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference, but who you're playing with, who your partner is.
Sure.
Can make an amazing difference in how you play.
And Brian Dumoulin at times looked like the most improved player in the entire NHL.
Exactly. Yeah. So Jimmy Rutherford took some heat for some of his trades. And all of a sudden, some of his trades, his most recent trades, you look at James Neal and you look at Hornquist and you say, well, geez, Hornquist was pretty good. Hornquist has been pretty valuable in that Rangers series. So all of the moves are starting to come around a little bit now.
Matt Cullen was such a nice little touch, too.
And of course, 39 years of age.
Rutherford has that association going back to Carolina, so that shouldn't surprise us. Yeah. And he's given – this would be third shot, I think, with Rutherford and Matt Cullen. Yeah. And he's been so valuable to players like Hunackle, to players like Rust, as a veteran who, as we've all seen before with this player, Matt Cullen, up and down your lineup. And he's fine wherever you put him.
And that's what I think is going to happen with this with this series as well, is the depth is going to come into play. Who's fourth line? We've talked about it before. Who's fourth line, third line is going to produce for him? Who's going to get the secondary scoring? I mean, the one disappointing thing in Pittsburgh right now is Chris Kunitz, who hasn't got any points right now for Pittsburgh. Is he going to come alive? Is this guy going to be there? I don't know.
Connor Sheary. Connor
Sheary is – and that's a good point, Jeff. Like, you know, Washington doesn't have a Connor Sheary, that type of player.
Yeah.
And I think those types of players make a huge difference when it comes to the playoffs right now. And I think that's where Pittsburgh may have a little bit of an advantage over Washington. Washington's got crazy scoring power. So does Pittsburgh. But I think Pittsburgh just has that maybe a little bit more grit and grinding element to their game than Washington does.
Let me ask the former general manager.
Like the Quine on the Islanders.
Alan Quine,
And you know how I know how to pronounce his name, Quine?
How?
Because it matches with wine.
Which is what you think about in the dying seconds of a third period one-goal game.
What I think about when I'm out of this joint.
Where you say, please don't let this thing go into overtime. Let me ask you a question.
There, Shanny, how was that for a pronunciation?
He can't hear you. He's walking his dog. He sent us a nice text of his pooch as well. Vezina finalists announced yesterday, goaltender of the year. Braden Holtby, Ben Bishop, and Jonathan Quick. No Crawford, no Lundqvist, no Corey Schneider had an outstanding season.
So Quick, you gave Quick, the GMs a shot there yesterday.
Of course I did. And I'm going to ask you the same thing. And by it's funny because every time I ask a general manager this, what's the one position generally you have the hardest time assessing? Normally it comes back goaltenders, right? Oh, voodoo goaltenders. We don't know. Hard to pick, hard to draft them, when they're going to develop. It seems to be the one position that general managers generally, by their own admission, have a hard time with. So I ask, why is it that the general managers vote on the Vezina?
Who should? The goalie coaches?
I don't know, but if you're going to let the GMs vote on and they put Jonathan Quick on there, let's let the goaltenders vote on the GM of the year.
You know what? The GMs now, first of all, they got capologists that look after the cap. Yeah. They got contract negotiators that look after contract negotiations. They got director of pro scouting to look after pro scouting. They got director of amateurs.
If you would have had that.
They need something to do other than talk to the media and they've got and take heat from their owner.
And they've got a CBA with a triple salary cap involved in it.
So they need something to make them, other than, you know, in fairness, dealing with their owners 50% of their job and dealing with media is 25% of the job, and the other 25% is picking the Vezina. So don't take that from them.
So Jeff, but to your point, you're saying that you thought that maybe Quick shouldn't be there and Quick a guy like Crawford should be there instead.
But here's the thing about Quick. Quick had one outstanding season where he was fantastic. We'd say that was a great season. But if you look at his numbers ever since, and this isn't a knock on Jonathan Quick, he's a really good goalie.
Didn't he win two cups?
Yes, but wins is a team stat, Doug. So you're saying Gilbert Perreault, Marcel Dion weren't good players because they didn't win any Stanley Cups?
But that's, you said he had one good year. I'd say he had at least two good years if he won two cups.
He was involved in a team that had, but I'm saying from an individual point of view, from individual statistics, like his performance, like there's nothing wrong with being, to my mind, there's nothing wrong with being a good NHL goalie. And that's kind of how I look at Jonathan Quick, and I think a lot of people do as well. I don't know where I see greatness there, where I see Corey Crawford had a great year. I thought Corey Schneider had a great year. You can make the case of someone like Steve Mason, Marc-Andre Fleury had great years. Henrik Lundqvist always.
Luongo had a good year.
But somehow,
be careful,
GMs tend to look
be
at
careful
wins more than anything else. That's a
Quick
team
has
stat.
Won two Stanley Cups.
I
be
get
careful.
That. So has Antti Niemi. You want to put him on the list?
Did he win a Conn Smythe? No, he's only won one, hasn't he?
He's won one Stanley Cup with Chicago.
That's right. That's not two.
He outdueled Mike Layton.
I think to your point, you're saying that the GMs are picking the Vezina finals. So I guess the GMs are looking, who would I want as my goalie right now to build a team around? And maybe the majority of them feel that Jonathan Quick is a guy that they would want to go with, and that's one of the reasons why.
Should it be like the others? Have the media picked them?
There are problems with
Seriously.
A lot of the choices. There are issues with a plenty, and we can rehash the Alex Ovechkin left and right wing if we want.
By the way, Zeisberger, wherever he is, he's forgot he owes me $52 US, Zeisberger.
Where does that come from?
I sent his. Because he was picking. He used to be one of the guys that picked. For some reason, he's disappeared off the face of the earth since I went and got his tape recorder.
Where
and
does
sent
the $52 come
I
from?
I picked up his tape recorder in Boca Raton that he left there at the GM meeting.
Now,
cost me $52, and he's disappeared off the face of the earth, Zeisberger.
This has turned into a airing of the grievances here on Hockey Central.
That's interesting.
He said I got 3,000 words off the tape recorder, so thanks for sending. I said, oh okay. Maybe send the check
cash?
Then.
I don't think you're hurting, Doug. Don't worry. Doug's got enough money. Is that one Braden Holtby's trophy lose? We just got a couple of seconds.
Yes.
I think so, 100%.
Totally.
Yeah. Could anyone make, you could make case for Ben Bishop. I know Holtby had the great start in Tiesberger's record
Holtby,
and all that. But
there's no chance. It's, you know this what? Is all Holtby's. Yeah.
Here we go.
Darren Pang should pick the Vezina.
The broadcast ex-goaltenders turn broadcasters?
Yes, he should pick the Vezina. He's my choice to pick the Vezina.
Well, then Brian Elliott wins the Vezina.
Exactly.
The Panger.
And 100%. Hitchcock's coach of the year. We'll just, but no, Panger. A guy like Panger should be in charge of picking the Vezina.
Tarasenko is your Hart Trophy winner.
Because he's, you know what? He studies goaltending.
Alex Steen is your Selke. Selke's tomorrow, but
no,
tonight.
I just mean he studies goaltending.
Selke is today. You're right. Selke's today. We'll find out what happens there. All right. Todd Hlischko, Doug McLean, full value as always. We will rejoin once again here, Hockey Central at noon. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the game tonight.